to order, maybe the last Comprehensive Facilities Subcommittee meeting. Just a reminder, meetings are recorded by Franklin Matters. Quick roll call, we got Dave Callahan.
Aaron Gallagher.
Al Charles on Zoom.
Yep, here.
All right, then Superintendent Jagir, Assistant Superintendent Paul Morano, Dr. Dutch, Colin, Tina Broad, Dr. Rogers, and Mike D'Angelo as well. I apologize, and bring snacks too, should have done that for our last meeting. But, and I say that.
We'll forgive you.
All right.
Yeah.
Maybe next time I'll try to. Well, Lucas, I'll kick it over to you in just a moment, but I would imagine this probably will be the last meeting of the Comprehensive Facility Subcommittee as we kind of move forward towards the implementation phase of the master planning. It's likely just going to make more sense just to kind of officially close out this subcommittee meeting. That'll kind of go to the full school committee as a vote, but to, you know, to dismantle and dissolve this. And then in, from there, Phoenix Rising, we'll have a new subcommittee coming through that's really just going to be focused on the implementation framework that was laid out. But with that, Superintendent Jagir.
Okay, I will, I'll get into the camera view in a second. I'm just teeing up a few documents just so that we're all working off the same page. And basically, we have some updates today on the progress we've made. Just give me one second. So in an effort to share what's been done, we've really been working in a few areas today. So Al, we will share a document with you as well, just so you have it.
You'll share this with him right now?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'll put up what we have too, so okay. Al can see it and view it on the screen. Share. Bear with me, we're using some features here. Share screen. So, what we should see is a school Al, are you seeing this on your screen?
Yeah, the Canva board.
Okay, yes, the phase one?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. So, just to be clear on what we have. Basically, we put together a series of updates. You're going to hear from different folks in the room today, including Colin Boisvert, our food service director, who has been working on the operations side of things with as far as school boundaries, things like that. Our director of facilities, Mike D'Angelo, was here as well. And you know the rest of our central office team that's been working. So basically, if you recall our last meeting, we broke down a few goal areas that we hope to achieve in the month of June as part of phase one. Phase one actually goes through August, but it was phase one June, phase one July, August. We tried to break them up because we're also working, as you all know, it's a pretty big date on the books next week that we've been working backwards towards as well to try to look at the work that we're doing. Administrative structures, we've basically, to put this out, I think we referenced this throughout our presentations when we talked about how we would be organized. But basically, we are looking to move to a one principal model at our middle school with three assistant principals and an administrator for specialized programs. So when you think about it in totality, we'll have basically, right now we have six administrators, three principals, three assistant principals, That totals six. We're looking to have one principal, and in essence, four. That's five, just as we move forward, to run a building which would have the sixth and seventh and eighth in it at the middle. At the elementary, we currently have 10, 11, to it. Oh, sorry, so we have five principals, and we have six assistant principals on our books for this school year at the schools, right? So you're looking at 11 folks. We're moving to a four elementary model, which would mean we would move from five principals to four, and then we would have an assistant principal assigned to each of those, so another four assistant principals. In addition, we would look to have two additional positions, so going from 11 to 10, to look at a specialized services, just like at the middle level, have someone who's going to be working in the special education and the student services programming. So that would be basically, you'd see economies of scale, just basically in those. That's the leadership structure. We are still determining, once we identify the principals and the assistant principals, we will begin to work out the other types of support roles and positions, but we're trying to decentralize decision making to the degree that once we can build out our team and we know who the team is administratively moving forward, we can start to make decisions at a much more granular level that I think people are looking for as we build this out. So those decisions that's the structure. So we met with the administrative team, assistant principals and principals, walked through that, and then we talked to them about initiating their interest in wanting to serve in a role like that. We had a submission window. The principals who are interested to continue to be a part of the that want to be in a leadership position like a principal, received those submissions. We have meetings this week, which each of the folks that are interested, they've made it known. We will be conducting those with our central office team. We're treating these like transfers, if you will. It's internal. We're not looking to go out externally to hire folks. We're trying to work with the folks that we have currently in our system that would work to serve as the next layer. And then identifying them now helps us really get clear on who the team would be to help us not only distribute the work, but in fairness to the people involved, who is going to be leading in the future. I think we owe it to them to give them that info too. So June, this week, we are working through that. June 10th, next week, we'll put the assistant principal survey out. And then we'll conduct a very similar process, okay, to get their interest and then have meetings with them to discuss their candidacy for those type of those roles and identify basically your assistant principals and your principal teams this month, okay? That leads us to, and then communicate with staff and families. We have a deadline, we have a date that we've set to make it known on who those principals would be by the end of school. It says June 13th here is a date we're shooting for to have that information out there. And then this summer, we're gonna create some scheduled set meetings where we'll engage, not only, we're meeting with principals all the time about the upcoming school year, but we'll be in a very unique situation where we have to have like the future team meetings as we continue through. Moving on to staff assignments, we've met with the FEA to discuss the transfer process. We have not finalized it, but basically we have some shared agreement on the information we need to identify in our list of staff, what information do we need to place people where they would like to work, because ultimately when you close schools and you shift the way we are, you have seniority. And someone's seniority, when you look at assignments in their contract, it's pretty clear around someone with more seniority has more choice in assignment. So what we would do is we're working out a survey before they leave for the end of the school year to get one survey out to them that talks about their interest in their grade level ranking of what they would teach or whatever their role is, and then also what school, basically. To try to, and then some other information that we need. We would then take that info as preliminary data as we start to look at schools and how we would distribute. We need to be in constant contact with the FEA on that around seniority. We have a list that we're using for all the budget things that we do. And then we would probably look to do that again in the fall, just to make sure we didn't miss anybody, and we don't know what can shift and who can shift. People can leave over the summer and resign, and there's a lot of different scenarios, so we should do it again. And then we would use that information to place people for the future. So we hope, our goal is to have staff and students and families know what school they'll be going to, or what school they work at in the fall when we get back as a starting point, once we kick the school year off in September, so we don't confuse people. Get them off, get them in the schools, get them in the classrooms they're in for that year, and then immediately following that, we want to have that be part of the charge, okay? The families, we did send out, May 13th, we put a letter out to families with information. We then had people fill out a form that they could submit, that if they had an interest in an area or a part of the process that we're going through, they could express that. And then as we start to get more engagement opportunities off the ground, we can go back to this list if we're looking for people who we may want to engage in, like some steering type work. We also would look for opportunities, especially once we appoint our leadership teams for the future, engagement opportunities and some of the information that we have to figure out. And we'll get to one opportunity coming up, and I'll wait for Colin to share his information. At the same time, the website's being updated. We will rededicate a page of the website for this project, because this is such a high engagement part of our work for the next school year. We will continue to provide information to families that's accessible, that looks at the maps interactively, that has information and data that they can look at. And then as we have information, we'll have a framework to build it out, continue to answer questions. When we make decisions, share that information. When we need to go in front of the school committee for decision making, for example, when we talk about boundary lines, that's a decision that we would want to propose on how they should be based on what we've analyzed, and then ultimately you set the boundary lines based on that data. So we'll continue to do that work. Operations wise, we are in the process of conducting traffic studies. So this week, every elementary and middle school is conducting traffic studies where they're counting the number of vehicles, such as cars, vans, buses, everybody who is driving up to a school every morning and afternoon, we're getting counts on, in addition to the number of cars that are parked in the parking lot, so we can understand all of that as baseline data to continue the work. Mike is here. He has an update on some of the things that will happen this summer. But it seems like the right time to kick it to Mike, just around the traffic piece and around that. Can you talk a little bit about next steps as far as traffic study?
So we'll have the initial data that the principals are getting, and they'll probably bring on to start with, put a scope of work together for both landscape engineers and architects to start looking at our existing complexes, bus loops, traffic. So they would be the prime person we're under contract with, and they would be hiring a traffic engineering firm. There's a number of traffic engineering firms I've worked with too in the Boston area. Everybody pretty much uses the same group of people. And that would probably, we'd want to get them, with the engineers and architects, we can get an initial study of just even as early as next week to get somebody down to just start watching some of this more with a trained eye. And we'd also want to bring in the town engineer who's done a lot of this work, redoing bus loops at these different schools. Remington Jefferson had changed. But he'd be very willing to help us. And so the landscape engineers, architects, would start by reviewing existing designs of both bus drop-offs and then even more student drop-offs by private vehicles. All these schools are slightly different. Remington Jefferson has multiple bus loops. So that all is a different category. But we'd start, get all these people on board, they'd start looking at it, making observations and reports. And then probably, there's only really a week and a half left to school, so you probably have a traffic engineer on board more for the fall to do actual counts at the schools. And, but they'll have already decided doing observations. And that'll give us a good start to, you know, what's the, I mean, we know how many kids are going to be in every school. We'll have a good idea of how many private vehicles and student drop-offs happen. And bus drop-offs are probably the easier thing. But as you know, a large percentage of Franklin students get dropped off by their parents or someone in their family. So, but again, that stuff rolling. I think we can get a landscape architect engineer down next week to get some initial stuff for us and make any recommendations, and then they'll solicit proposals from definite traffic engineers, and then we can go through that and you can move forward with a contract with these people and with the school committee, and then they can start interacting, hear more, and then, like I said, do the actual traffic counts right after school starts in the fall.
So that, thank you, Mike. I think that covers basically our plan to get information for, obviously, June, summer, and into the fall, as we start to look to balance that. So the last piece, I mean, we can take questions now, but I did have one more component. Colin has been working very hard on the student distribution. You know, the elephant in the room is, where is my kid going to school? We all know that. We said we would take time to do that, and we are. But we do have some preliminary data that Colin has put together to help us start to frame how this can look. Al, this might look somewhat familiar to you from last year, and I know some of the work that happened, but you know, our goals to look at to look at school assignment, one, we have to balance, basically you're going to balance like three or four things that are moving targets to a degree. The first is your overall enrollment at each building and trying to create some level of balance between the two, right? The second piece is geography. You have to look at enrollment counts and you have to look at geography. You need to look geographically so that kids are attending a school that's within the appropriate area to where they live. The third, fourth, and fifth are looking at different demographic pieces of information around our population diversity, your English language learners, your socioeconomic status are all pieces of data that you also try to, as you build any type of model, have accounted for that. Just to be very clear, and I said this early on, but you know, we are looking at this, there's no perfect percentage that's going to solve every single one of those things. You're accounting for too many variables, and it's just not how towns are set up. However, we're putting a concerted effort into the analysis, so we're gonna show you a few models that Colin put together that shows the breakdown so far of how we've looked at information in schools. So Colin, would you like to kind of walk through that?
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to switch this to... Is it called copy of, Colin, by the way?
It's just a subcommittee without the draft. Yeah, that one.
Okay.
So as Lucas said, this is really preliminary data, just to kind of see who we are, kind of where we're at, and you know, the first.
Okay.
So these are just our demographics for where we stand right now. You can see the percentage of the populations that Lucas talked about, and then the number of students by grade. So it's just a snapshot of where we are right now.
Want to move forward?
Sure. So model one is just a straight logical divide, pretty center of the town, looking at the roads. And this is sort of like what a distribution would look like for that. So you can see purple would be the north, orange would be the south in this model. Enrollment-wise, it makes a decent breakdown as far as population goes, but a lot of the other factors we'd like to consider in a model like this don't seem to fit very well. So we can see that the low-income percentage is significantly higher at South, as well as the population diversity as well. And one of the goals would be to be, you know, as even as possible in a divide like that. So this model, again, is a good middle-of-the-road one to start with, just because the enrollment piece is there. But there's many models that can branch off of a model like this, if that makes sense.
Your enrollment and geography. And these are drafts, Steve, just so you know.
Okay. So model two sort of is looking at the different demographic pieces now. So working off of that first initial model, just a little bit of a tweak to the line on the southeastern side of the town, you can capture more diverse population and a low-income percentage or number for the North Elementary School. Obviously, the enrollment figures here don't work, and it doesn't necessarily accomplish a percent accomplishment looking at that. But just looking at the demographic in the town, you know, this is another show of how the landscape is for the town of Franklin. So this one obviously wouldn't be one that we would consider moving forward with because of the enrollment at this point. So model three is sort of like a middle of the road one here to start with. So this one, instead of the map going southeast, goes northeast and northwest a little bit from that first model. So because of the, again, the landscape of where everybody lives right now, you know, this model, again, the enrollment is a little bit closer and it's definitely more showing a diverse population and a low-income balance versus model one. It still may not be where we would like to be, but the next slide will actually kind of help clarify that a little more. So these data maps right here, just looking at the first one on the left, the purple colors, this is the map of the low-income. So you can see the breakdown of where it is. It's a tricky spot as far as where it's located and as far as how the roads work and where the schools are located. There's a really dense population near the center of the map. The middle map is our diverse population map. And again, there's a very highly populated area in the middle as well. And then the map on the right with blue is everybody. So I think the keys to this map too to notice is that particularly on the one blue with everybody, there are parts of the town that are just really not habited. So like where the Franklin State Forest is, you can see a big chunk in the north west side, and then quite a bit on the southeast side as well. This is just not populated. So the top section of the town is just more densely populated than the south side of the town. And so the line is going to have to be somewhere in the middle, but it's sort of looking at pockets of those areas that work off of that line to find the right balance for the district.
We have our data from AppGeo as well, where we looked at neighborhood pockets. We met with them. We met with Priya, and it was Priya, not anyone else. But we met to just look at some of the way neighborhoods were analyzed and how bus traffic flows and some of those pieces as additional information. So we're continuing this work. This was just, this is a preliminary look at how the town breaks down, because there are questions that have come up would be, how would the line look and what would the divide be? You know, when we look currently, one thing I want to say is I don't know that I already said that we can't solve for everything, but we have to prioritize what we solve and how. And we have to also think about, right now, in our elementary schools, for example, we have a wide range of demographic differences. We have a wide range of enrollment differences, 288 to 565 enrollment. And when we think about high and low socioeconomic income, we have 27.8 high, 7.9 is the low across five schools. So that's a 20% difference. So I just would, as we do this, we'll continue to provide that data, but we're also doing an analysis around, does a divide north and south cut down on that percentage, even if it's not perfect? We have to look at that, and then supports need to follow students on what they need, depending on where we land. And just another, one other piece of information would just be the high needs. It's approximately 12% difference right now in our schools. So I think when we start to look at that data and we create lines, we're mindful of kind of where we live right now. How are five elementary schools different and the same? We'll do that again with two elementary schools and then try to look at the how do we balance that with keeping enrollment in check too. I think we would defeat the purpose if we had a 600 kid school and a 1300 kid school, right? That just wouldn't make sense. And we're not unlike other towns where enrollment is balanced, but we look to distribute students as evenly as possible, knowing that that's also a moving target depending on the address of a student in their demographic makeup. So these are all things that we'll continue to work on and share with you to make sure that we share that. Colin, anything else you want to add before we open it up?
No, I think next steps are, again, looking at all those factors and just continuing to work through models that best reflect the goals that we're looking for.
Do you have any guidance as a subcommittee or questions that we can answer now that would help us as we continue to work through our process?
Yeah, certainly. First of all, I want to say thank you so much. This is incredible. I think it's one to kind of just to how it's all laid out. I'm already kind of hearing like the people kind of talk about like how come, you know, if I'm going to South, why am I traveling so far? You know, and at least to kind of be able to say, well, just you said, you know, North is just more densely populated, so you kind of might be on the, you know, the more northern part of the southern, you know, school district, but just based on where the population stands. And I love just how we are kind of factoring in low income, the population, you know, diversity, and just those, the ELL, so important to kind of be taking a look at that holistically. So thank you so much for all the work that went into this. This is fantastic. Just for a question, I'm gonna kick it over to Al first.
So as of right now, No immediate questions. I mean, I feel like we're in a good start. I do agree. Can you go back to like the first three options of the divide?
The models?
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think it's gonna be really based on what the capacity of our schools are. You know, I think while we are caring for balance, I think it's also, we need to see what makes sense in terms of capacity of the buildings, and you know, it doesn't make sense for one to be at 12, the goal is 1300, another at 600, so I know we just need to do our due diligence on that one. Mm-hmm. I mean, looking at it, I think like, model number one makes the most sense numbers-wise, but once again, I would need to do a deeper dive and see like, what are the other potential pitfalls that may happen. Mm-hmm. But definitely a good start. Do we have a specific timing of when we want this to be finalized and kind of this is the end solution?
Yeah. So we, as we said, the process is we need to have the school committee vote on the final attendance boundaries. We thought it would be prudent to share this with our community, just to give a sense, similar to what we did last year, Al, in a way, where, but I also thought the way they did the master plan, where they had an open, where you walked through, and we have ways we can stage this, but present these aren't the models we necessarily will end up with, but just picture this as a frame where we have multiple models and people can come through and circulate, in addition to other topics, and start to provide feedback and input on each of them, the pitfalls, what they see. But ultimately, we would like to be able to come to you with a recommendation and having presented basically our analysis and where we feel like we would best be served with our students. So what we know is we do need time. We're in June. We have obviously our focus right now. We're about to conclude school for the year. We're working on identifying the principals of these buildings and admin. We wanted to show good faith that we are analyzing this to get this project moving and make progress. But ultimately, I think we need time to get that done, and we need to continue this work through the summer. But I would imagine at one of your school committee meetings, in the fall, like early fall, one of the initial meetings, we would want to present where we land with this. And I think we'd also engage our community again. Doing things in the summer is tricky, we know, but the goal isn't to try to push this through in a way that's not thoughtful and tries to move. I did say initially off the bat that attendance and boundary lines, we seek input, but ultimately we have to make some decisions based on your point out around the priorities and present information that is logical, and then put the resources where we need them for students like we do every year.
Okay, thank you. No, that makes sense. And I mean, our early fall hopefully kind of target deliverable makes sense. I think as long as we have something to work back from and making sure that we're planning having communication and awareness and education, I think that's key. So when the school committee is making a vote, it's not a surprise that it's a priority.
Yeah, agreed. And I think it gives us time to get our data that we have, our website up. This summer, we're going to be busy, obviously, with a lot of things. But ultimately, I think the fall, if we need to know by the fall, identify where kids go, where people teach, and who's leading. That's like the basis for all other decisions, like how many teachers we need, how many, you know, whatever the design's going to be and the layout and the number of staff we need to support students. That's what we'll have to do. So, okay.
Erin?
Yeah, I mean, as far as these maps are concerned, I know, like saying, you know, kind of off the bat, that a few of them here aren't really going to be options. So I'm curious to see kind of how they evolve over the summer and where things go from there.
And I think I might have just two other things too. If you're looking for guidance, I mean, it's just my input, but everybody else, feel free to chime in. I think when we are kind of looking at like enrollment difference, if there's like, probably don't want to exceed more than like a 10% difference between the two schools, you know, if that might help kind of like narrow the range, that's at least kind of my take.
Okay.
And at some point too, once we kind of have, I mean, like maybe, you know, once we kind of have a bit more, a better idea about which models that we might be going with, I don't know if it might be helpful too to look at the enrollment numbers just over the next like 5 to 10 years, kind of based on what we had for like the McKibben study. That might be a possibility, just to kind of continue to incorporate that, because I know that's something else too that I've just heard from the community about. When we know what it's going to look like tomorrow, we've seen the population studies, we know what it's going to look like. But even just to kind of say, you know, model one, you know, for that first year, 980 versus 956, you know, year two, year three, year four, this is kind of where those projections might look at, right, what it might show. Could be helpful.
I agree. I think also when we look at boundary lines in future years, redistricting is such a big thing. That's why no one wants to touch it. But I do think we may want to down the road consider. Now, if it's one line, there's opportunity every 5 years. Al, you brought this up last year, but get into a bit of a cultural kind of understanding that we can look at that line in any, you know, every, not to disrupt everyone, but try to look at it in a sequential way where we just tell people, we're not looking at it until 2029, I'm making this up. And then 2034 is the next time we do any type. We could look at that and make adjustments. When someone new purchases a home, we could start to balance differently now that you're looking at one division line. I think that's a benefit to this model we didn't really talk about, but we could almost forward plan, and it's almost like, you know, if we've looked at zones and we're starting to see imbalance, we could look at people who are on those lines, and then when they change over and it's someone going to a new school, they're not transitioning or transferring, you could look at it. So I think you have, there's some things we can explore down the road. It's not the priority, we're trying to establish the initial, but it could be down the road a way that we also factor in how can we forecast out and create and maintain balance.
So the plate's already full enough?
It's pretty full right now.
All right. maybe just one other thing I might say too is if it's possible as we kind of model that out, just to do like a carve out or a different color. I'm really cognizant about those DT kiddos. They'll be like fifth grade when this plan comes into effect. Mm-hmm. Just so we can also kind of see, you know, where they are currently, and then with each model where they might potentially go to. I mean, I think realistically, it's probably just down to about like 12 to 15 kids that might be disrupted. If even that's probably the higher end. But still, I think it'll be helpful just to kind of make sure that that stays in the forefront, you know, so we're kind of just aware of what's happening.
We do have that list already. So.
Perfect. Oh, awesome. Yeah. So that'll be easier.
Part of the consideration.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Really, this is spectacular, Colin. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. So what we'll do as well is the update that you saw, the Canva update, we're going to provide, that's going to be a framework that we use as we move forward and build those out for phase two, phase one, July and August, phase two, September. We'll list out the goals, the status, and we see that as an evolving document. So we're going to try to lay this out so that, to Al's point, the end game is clear, working backwards to the dates. And we're just getting out of the dugout, if you will, to get up to plate to get this going. But I think that will be really important for all of us. And I think it will live on our website and be something that we can continue to provide details on as we move forward. So,
yeah. And I know I have just a couple of questions about the status update, but first I'll kind of kick it out. Al, do you have any other kind of questions yourself?
No, at this time I'm good. Thank you.
I had a question about that update document, the Canva one.
Yep.
Just small thing. Were you imagining each of those assistant principals in the middle school as being kind of assigned directly to a grade, like they're, you know, just
great question.
Just in imagining the size of the school. I know a lot of folks have been talking about that. How that structure would play out?
It's a very good question. What we've determined is we had no intention of cutting the level of assistant principal support at the middle level or the elementary level. Because
right.
We know we're gonna need, this was not an opportunity to kind of create a savings in that area because we need that level of assistant principal working with kids.
Yeah.
How they're assigned, we wanna engage the appointed principal in that conversation. We've talked about a few models where, and they came up in the feedback sessions with the group of principals, was you could assign a sixth grade, a seventh grade, an eighth grade, right?
Yeah.
You could have an assistant principal loop with kids and go from six, seven, eight. You could look at it by last name, so that's what the high school does, but start to look at groups of kids so you engage with the family. Mm-hmm. There's drawbacks to, each of these has positives and negatives, and one, you know, you could think about, if I work with the sixth grade, I'm working with all of the teams of teachers and the counselors to work with those kids. If I go by grade, I have to be at three levels with each. So it's just a matter of each of them has like positives and negatives. But when you think
right.
about your instructional support teams within the building, I think that's where we want to engage the principal in that. And the appointed assistant principals in that work to
yeah.
talk about how it could be best distributed. I've worked in both models and seen the value, but that's a great question. We will know more, and we'll communicate that out on what it will look like so people have a can continue to build their conceptual understanding of what it's going to be like for my kid first day of school in school A, B, and C.
Just in terms of the elementary level, so we have the four principals, four APs. Mm-hmm. So like two and two for the special program admin. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be two special programs, like one in each school?
That's the way we designed it, to have two. Okay. If we have two replicated specialized programs,
yep,
at the North and South elementaries, we designed the original plan to have two.
Okay.
What, you know, we have to, that's our plan. That's what we think would be the best way to set us up for success. As you know, we're looking at funding as well. So all of this is predicated on having a stabilized, you know, system that allows us to have these positions to do what we want to do. Does that make sense?
Do you think on Canva it would be helpful just to, because I'm showing, you know, it says four principals, four APs, but then no number.
Oh, okay.
Specialized, do you think it would be helpful just to put two?
Yep.
Okay.
That's how we framed it, and that's our goal.
Yeah.
And that's what we would hope to see happen.
Particularly
as we think of the work.
For the communicate principal appointments for the 25-26 school year. So when that communication goes out, the boundary lines won't be set. So it's really just going to be like more generic, you know, Principal A and Principal B are over at North, Principal C. Like it's going to,
yes,
go out to the entire community, not targeted to certain families.
No, we would have to go to everyone because we haven't identified where kids will go to school. So it'll have to be a district-wide thing, mm-hmm, that will go out and will live on the site. And it might be, we have to decide whether we're going to put it on the old one or put it on the new one. But we'll communicate out with our families, and it will live on the site. We have to decide how, when's our cutoff to update, because the website company is working behind the scenes to get that up. There will be a point at some point in late June where they're no longer going to service that. We have to kind of figure that out. So we will figure that out, but yes, we would be communicating who the principal and assistant principals would be. When we have that info.
Okay. And then?
Well, no principals first, just so you,
right,
just to,
yep,
be clear.
In that email, if you might, just from my own, I would appreciate this, include just a little note confirming that this is for fall of 2025. I'm so worried about kids being dropped off at the wrong school in September.
Yes.
So just so that way everybody knows if your kid.
Maybe we might be able to time this to get all the info and just put it all out at once, too. We could talk. I know we need to figure out when we'll put that out.
Yeah.
But we're still in the selection kind of meeting process. But yes, I get your point.
Yeah.
To avoid confusion.
Yeah. I've just seen a kid gets dropped off, you know, apartment or kid out at Jefferson Remington. And folks drive away, and kids just ready to start school.
So,
not yet. So I appreciate that.
Yep.
And then the other one, just in terms of the teacher transfer process.
Mm-hmm.
So. Because when you kind of talk about, like, they can kind of solicit and say, this is where I'm interested in going, and that would base on seniority.
Mm-hmm.
So if, is it going to be like an automatic guarantee? Like if you're teaching over at, like, say, Kennedy, and then now you're going over to North, is it an automatic guarantee you're just bumping somebody, or are you just saying,
So we have to still work with our FEA on that process, but the way it works is when you transfer someone involuntarily, right, you have to look at the least senior folks and work up when you do transfers. So the more seniority that you have, the less likely you are to have an involuntary transfer. You always go for the junior person who's in the school, you know. So we have to work through the process of that and determine, but if a teacher who's been here 30 years puts in and says, I'd like this, and a year three teacher puts in for the same thing, obviously the 30-year teacher's going to have priority over the. So that's where looking at the list and what people are at, it's going to be a collaborative process so that we're super clear on where people land.
Okay. And then what if, like, is it just applying just to transfers? I know you kind of mentioned before, like, you know, if everybody just kind of gets up out of the chairs, moves around.
Yeah, they're all, because none of their schools exist. So I would say to you, this is, I know where you're going with this. If you're an elementary teacher in a current building, you're not necessarily guaranteed to be in that building if you're a junior person, because now we've said, mm-hmm, every elementary school is being re identified, or we're establishing two elementary, well, four, you know, if you think about it, four, but we're establishing basically four schools where five existed, but none of the five exist. There's not a Keller, there's not a Jefferson. This actually gets into the point we're going to have as we start to think about merging cultures, is unlike the Davis Thayer closure where they merged with Keller, that was an existing elementary school that merged with
like an acquired.
Yeah. Right, so what's going to happen is people will express their interest in areas, they'll get assigned, and then those become newly established schools. It's not, it will no longer be the Keller or the Jefferson, for the example of a complex, right? Horace Mann, it's actually combining all three, because Remington, so it's not the Horace Mann Middle School.
Yep. So it's not a situation of like, well, and like, I was here first. So because you're coming in, I get tips.
Can I just add?
Yeah.
So that's part of like the collaborative process that we're working through with the FBA to try to say, like, I'm looking at an interest survey right now that we're trying to co-develop to gather interest and input from folks and really get strategically aligned on this, so we're all in agreement up to how that process will work. So we're still working kind of behind the scenes a little bit on that, but certainly everything that's all discussed around seniority will play a significant part of that. But there's going, some folks are saying, I'm 20 years, but if my principal goes there, I really want K2, and I might really prefer a change. So there's a whole lot of
You want to put people, you want to get as many people to where they want to be.
Right, absolutely.
Right? Oh, yeah. Ideally, but we're just going to, I guess we keep emphasizing we're bound by the contract.
Yes. No,
you can't,
absolutely.
Like, just, I know you know that. I just say that for whoever's watching online or anyone in the room. And Al has his hand up. It might be related, so.
Yeah, Al, go ahead.
Yeah, and just to piggyback on that, I mean, because we're not even just shifting, we're shifting classrooms as well. So, I mean, where a kindergarten classroom was today is not going to be where it is tomorrow. So, like, for me, the way I see this is a wholesale dip, and everything is being reconfigured, and there's no, like, dibs, I was here first, you know, like, I think it's a more equitable approach in comparison to what we've done before, where it's just emerging in cultures, and now it's like, figure out how you fit into the existing structure. Now it's, there is no existing structure, and you are making the new structure wholesale.
Establishing brand new school cultures, which is a lot of work for not just your teachers, but your community, your students. It's all part of the big picture. So, good points by all.
Absolutely. No, thank you very much, Al. No, I think that's great. Yeah, I think it's going to make it a lot easier. It's not going to feel like that merger or assimilation. It's just, this is, you know, we're now at North. Here's that community and that culture, and it's just being more equitable across the board. So,
okay,
that's great. Any other kind of questions, comments?
Not at this point, I
think. Anything to add? Paul, did we cover everything? Just, we talked about students or special education, special ed programs. Mm-hmm. Bob, I think there's no real, we're just working through this analysis, but, and Colin, thank you for presenting what you did, and we'll keep sharpening the pencil and figure that out.
Hey, just one thing to add, not necessarily a question, but a comment. I thank you all for what you're doing, especially with the specialized, the lead for specialized programs. I think this now gets more advocacy for those students in specialized programs, and having somebody that's dedicated to them and knowing their needs more so than what we do today. I mean, I know we do a good job today, but I feel like this now just gets another more eyes on it that's dedicated, and it can really advocate a lot more than we have in the past. So I'm looking forward to how that comes to fruition and what will come about because of that.
Thanks, Al. We're also reallocating resources, but with that, we're also reallocating programming. So programs that existed across multiple elementaries will be in one or two. Mm-hmm. So with the volume, we want to make sure we have the support. And we hear that from teachers, we hear that from the student services staff too, is just around wanting to make sure that we have, thank you for Thank you for acknowledging that. We're trying our best. It's all predicated, too, on what our budget looks like and how we move forward, but that's the goal, so. Okay, that's all the information we have to share today, but it was just to give an update.
No, which is fantastic. And so I think as we move forward with like the next subcommittee, I know there's going to be a lot of different kind of irons in the fire there.
Yep.
Kind of talk about like a liaison concept.
Yep.
And so based on what the idea that it kind of still be like a subcommittee member of three of us, but might be able to expand to the whole seven of us, just a bit kind of being liaisons so we can kind of join in at different meetings. And we can kind of report back here and report back at the full school committee as well.
Yeah, I think the idea of a liaison like we had last year, I would wonder about two ways. One, you have like the PCC, Al is working with the PCC. They're going to go through change. I think it's organically going to happen as part of their meetings, right? That's one level. When it comes to the planning piece, obviously we have the operational side, but I would imagine, I think what would be most helpful is to have maybe one school committee member be a part of the conversations where we provide updates as just a liaison as we move forward through that and can involve in particular pieces of it. Like if we're going to have input sessions, a school committee liaison who's there to be a part of it and witness it and see it, that type of thing, I think would allow us to work more nimbly too and kind of move things and then create the engagement side versus the committee side. And I think to me, that's the way I see it, how I've seen it. We have a lot of subcommittees for a lot of things, but this is one where I feel like having operations work, we know like traffic's going to get done with a team that's going to include the town engineer, and we're going to have people qualified to provide that and then present information to school committee as a whole. If there's a liaison who would be helpful as a connector, I think that we would be happy to engage them in some of this stuff as we move forward too. We invited Al last year to redistricting to meeting sessions where we felt like it was important to get that perspective and voice as we built it up. So if that's an option and someone was interested to be a part of that work, master planning, you know, we would be interested to do that.
It has a kind of sound for everybody else, just that more of that kind of framework, that concept.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Okay, so perfect. Yeah, so I think what would be great is, what I'll do is I'll kind of reach out just to the full committee, just to kind of let them know, you know, that we'll be soliciting just additional interest for some of these other ones. I might be able to kind of, you and I can always kind of work on,
yep,
specifically which liaisons, you know, like operationally. I know like you talked about like culture and community, which I think would be super important to have that. Just kind of which ones,
yep,
you know, what are we looking at? So then that way, once we have the first meeting of that next new subcommittee, we could already just kind of hit the ground running with knowing what positions we need, who's going to, you know, who those liaisons will be, what members will be where, and so.
Okay, yeah. We can talk too, and just talk about,
yeah,
how it can be designed to be just as purposeful as possible, right?
Yeah.
So. But at least, if the framework,
yep,
sounds good for everybody else, that's perfect.
All right.
Any other questions? Comments? Then that time, well, let's see, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. I'll give that second.
Al had the drop off, but he...
All right, okay.
He seconded it.
Yeah. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, motion passes, 6 o'clock. We are done. Thank you all.
Okay.
Thank you.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.